Greetings all. My name is Alice Janssen, and it's a pleasure for me to welcome you to the ICANN Strategy Panel on Identifier Technology Innovation webinar, Session 1. Before we begin, I'd like to briefly remind all participants of housekeeping items. This webinar is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. The session is being streamed via the Adobe Connect room. If you intend to voice comments or questions during the Q&A, please join your Digo Bridge. Your lines are currently muted and will be muted throughout the presentation. You may submit questions or comments via the Adobe Connect chat pod during the presentation. At the end of the presentation, you will be given the opportunity to voice your comments and questions during the Q&A. All lines will be unmuted for the Q&A. If you are on the bridge, please remember to mute your computer speakers once the floor is open to avoid echo. If you wish to speak during the Q&A, please raise your hand in the Adobe Connect room to be added to the queue. Should you not be speaking, please mute your lines using star 6, dial star 7 to unmute. This live recording and transcript will be made available following the session. You may find housekeeping indications in the Adobe Connect notes tab. With that, we'll turn to Paul McAfee-Tripp, Strategy Panel Chair.
Good morning, everyone. This is Paul McAfee-Tripp. I'd like to welcome you to this presentation. We're going to spend some time reviewing some of the discussions we've had within the panel and outside of the panel. And I think the other thing to point out is this is sort of a selected subset of the ideas in order to fit the time that we have here. Next slide, Alan. The formal charter for this group is shown here. I'm not going to read it all for you. But basically, the use of the word identifier instead of domain name or something of the like was intentional because we thought that within the time frame we're considering, other identifiers may well get a prominent role and they may have a relationship to the existing suite of identifiers that ICANN deals with. Next slide, please. I think I want to point out to everybody that it isn't that the goal of this panel is to reach the conclusions and we'll be done. The goal of this panel really is to provide input into the ICANN strategic planning process, which follows up after this panel. But we'll take a look at what we recommend. The other thing here is, when I said before that we were looking at developing technology or roadmaps or whatever, a lot of what ICANN is going to do is going to hopefully result in other people developing some of the technology we're talking about. ICANN is not a huge software development organization or anything, but you know, it can act to, for example, create a vision. It can act to collect a more worldwide and technology to policy to civil society set of ideas and react to the ideas that we provide. So we're all technologists on the panel, but again, what we're doing is input to other processes, and we're not expecting necessarily that ICANN is going to actually implement things. We want good things to happen, but they're probably only going to happen at ICANN if it's something that's close to its root mandate or some other ICANN key capability. That being said, ICANN does separately and jointly sponsor things. And so we have friends throughout the ISTAR world. And we're hoping that perhaps we can catalyze some of the directions we're talking about rather than implementing it ourselves in ICANN. Next slide, please. The early on strategy that we used here is to try and look at the technology and look for forcing trends. We all understand, for example, that mobility is getting more and more important. And we also know that there are some problems that need to be solved. Second part of the strategy is I've certainly tried to steer some of the discussions away from areas that are already overrun with people trying to solve it. There's an awful lot of these issues that are part of the day-to-day work of hundreds or even thousands of people, And they're going to be the experts. So we're going to put together or try to put together the knowledge that they have rather than developing it. We don't have something new to say. We should just say there's experts who are already looking at it. Next slide, please. So given the short time frame, which I think has been sort of truncated twice, the framework that we're using for the panel is we're going to document all issues looked at, and what that means is the panel is scheduled to produce a report at the end of the month, which would have much more detailed information about things that we looked at. Identify some interesting subsets, and you're going to see a few of those things today. And create a roadmap for what we think the 10-year horizon will show about identifier technology, especially the things that are directly relevant to ICANN. And again, this is input to a strategic planning process, so we need to make some actionable recommendations. This isn't just an identifier survey class. Next slide, please. The panelists are identified here on this list. A lot of them are also on the call, so I'm sure that they're going to correct my misstatements. And you can look at the participants list, and if you have questions, address them directly. Obviously, we have a wide range of expertise in the panel, and I've enjoyed that, although sometimes it's been interesting to see people disagree within the panel about stuff, and I'm sure that will continue. Next slide, please, Alex. Just for reference, these are the identifiers that ICANN currently deals with. The main names are clearly at the forefront, but there's all of these other identifiers that are there. In fact, one of the questions that is one of my favorites is, how does ICANN go about publishing information about the allocations they've made with regard to domain names or with regard to identifiers that are managed by the IAM function? I guess this also omits the time zone database and they're being something else, but it's just for reference. Okay, next slide, please. I'm eager to get to the interactive part of this, but I'm going to give you a roadmap of today's topic, so to speak. One of which is to talk about the drivers for the roadmap or what we think are the important influences that are going to play out over the next decade. There's new identifiers and our experience with that. Hardening the root. The root is obviously one of the key things that ICANN works on. And then what I'll call DNS fundamentals or deossification. There's a general issue here about a lot of people think that the DNS design is tied down by a large number of Gordian knots that are either causing it to stop evolving or are things that we need to figure out how to solve. But we'll talk about that. All right. Next slide, please. I want to start here, and a lot of people have asked me, why am I calling it Darwin drivers, and this is related to the DNS. I think one of the things that almost everybody that we talk to would agree with is that when you take a look at what's driven the evolution of DNS and what will drive the evolution of DNS over the next decade, a lot of it is not truth, beauty, elegance, or whatever. It's a very Darwinian kind of thing. Broadly speaking, I've tried to classify those by things that are likely to cause the DNS to expand in either size or function. I guess there are several dimensions to the expansion or contraction. Let's talk about the expansion side first. There's our organic growth, legacy base. Much as we might decry the fact that it's very hard to get DSL modem vendors out there to fix the code in that box that's sitting in the closet that's 10 years old. It also is the case that pretty much anything that computes on the planet understands how to talk DNS if it knows how to communicate. So that's a base, and everyone is going to want to take advantage of that installed base. Universality, I think, is one of the things that separates the DNS from other identifying systems like X500 or whatever, in the sense that it's pretty much part of anything that connects to the Internet or perhaps your home network. New TLDs. There's a vast variety of opinions about the utility of the new TLDs, but I think it's pretty clear that there's going to be a huge amount of people who are going to try for innovation or just plain old marketing. And they're going to want to exploit, protect, and extend their brand. People sold pet rocks, and people will, in fact, the argument that I often take a look at is walk down the street and just see branding on clothing. I think that that's going to surprise us, but there's varying opinions here. New capabilities. I think one of the things that comes to mind is DNSSEC. There's an awful lot of ideas that people have for expanding the use of the DNS that relies on security and getting the DNSSEC space out there. It's been a while coming, but I think that there's places where that will leverage it. So that will set growth in the DNS use. New data. If what you do is you regard the DNS as a database, then making more data available through the DNS, particularly given that it's pretty much the most real-time system that might be available, might be something that would drive expansion. On the other side of the ledger, contraction. The user interface has a number of aspects that probably want to drive you away from using the DNS or its use. There's the accent on commerce, which is to say people who have browsers want to either A, help you out with artificial intelligence that looks at your intent and turns it into the place that you go, or exploit commerce in the sense of business reasons for wanting to not use the DNS, but rather use some other schemes we've seen this in the past. If portable devices are the future of the Internet, then probably typing domain names as you walk down the street is not the way you want to do things. An audio interface might not be right. People have talked about whether or not one suggestion we had was to use a standard way of publishing domain names in 2D barcodes and also developing technology to make that more easy. The portable world, I think, is a challenge for direct use of domain names. One of the questions, I think, the analogies that I've heard are, one, the DNS is like paper with regard to e-books. In other words, it's something that's just not going to be needed in the future. Alternatively, other people believe that the DNS is something on the order of the instruction set of your CPU. And while you don't use assembly language or directly access that interface that much, except for experts, that it's going to sit there and be part of the infrastructure that's not visible to the user. Whether or not the DNS is going to fade from the user's view, I think is the thing where I've seen a lot of divergence in people's opinions. There's commercial identifiers. I had a child ask me the other day, why don't all email addresses end in gmail.com? There's also the use of the Facebook identifier as a directory system. It's kind of one of the other things. Obviously, there's a urge to have the commercial world own the space. And lastly, sooner or later, the DNS is going to be replaced by something new. My advice to people is if they want to make something that will last for 200 years, don't invent Internet technology. Invent music and hope you can be a Mozart. This technology is all designed to be replaced. But sooner or later, that will happen. Next slide, please. One of the things that I've observed in the research world is that names and naming systems are incredibly hot. There's name-based networking, content-based networking, information-based networking, and many others. Seems like the only thing that they can't agree on is what to name their field. But names are centric, and the idea here is that rather than using addresses, what you want to do is to name the content that you want and retrieve it that way. So a common theme in that kind of research world is access by name and opportunistic caching in the infrastructure or at the edge. There's many of these research efforts underway in different continents. I'm most aware of the ones in the U.S., but there's also ones in Europe that I see every day, and Asia as well. The idea that you use names and that the names are a higher-level language for the primitives of the network is one that's very popular in the research world these days. And one of the other benefits that these systems have over the DNS is that, well, with 35 years of experience and a bunch of new ideas put into the DNA, they can be much cleaner, extensible, or powerful. So one of the questions we're going to have to come up with is to say, is there a way that we evolve towards these more general systems? Are they, in fact, the right idea? Because the jury is still out, much as the research world seems to agree. There's revolutionary ideas that come in as common ingredients in this world. There's a lot of people that believe that you should just have self-certifying and flat names. Oftentimes, those self-certifying and flat, the question is, how do you find them? And usually, there's some kind of PKI-ish structure to go do that. Recently, people have been arguing that this PKI structure is exactly the thing that the NSA et al. Wants to collect, and that it's a weakness with regard to the privacy of the system, that you really need something that's more peer-to-peer. I think one of the questions in the research world is, how do you ensure that you can find names without ensuring that they will be found by people that are just trying to soup up all the information in the system? And is that a concern, frankly? Lastly, there's user-friendly names. While we talk about how domain names may be not as nice as free text typed into the browser window, you see all of these short names, and that just having a short name in some sense is user-friendly. What does user-friendly mean? How do you guarantee that you can pass a user-friendly name from one user to another? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Next slide, please. So, you know, where is all of this roadmap stuff? What's the issue that ICANN has? I mean, you know, ICANN serves the Internet community by administering part of the DNS. I happen to think that the DNS is one of the most important building blocks in the present Internet and for some future open innovation. But as I said before, the present DNS is limited by a number of issues. There's simple operational ones, like the packet size hasn't been improved. The MTU hasn't really expanded the way you would like it. If we had scaled the packet size with the same number of orders of magnitude, three or four, that we've scaled the speed of the network, then we'd have a lot less work to do with regard to try and figure out how to make DNSSEC larger data packets go through cable modems and other user devices that were designed many, many, many years ago. I think that there's an issue with the protocol. In other words, the difficulty in defining new formats, and it's more difficult to put data into the DNS or to retrieve it selectively than we would like. There's a process issue. One of my favorite things to notice is that the DNS Ops Working Group in the IETF explicitly defines mechanisms and not protocols to avoid the admittedly arduous process of getting things standardized. Mechanisms are out there. They're used by billions of people and by all the operators, but they haven't been standardized into protocols. One of the panelists in the panel, who I'll let him remain nameless. I asked him about the title of an Internet draft, because it seemed like the Internet draft title was not exactly related to the content of the Internet Draft. And he said, oh, well, that's to get it published as an RFC. One of the things that I wonder about is whether or not there's a need for a more overall architectural look at what we can do with the DNS. Right now, there's no question that there's a huge amount of DNS development that's going on in the IETF. There's DANE and there's DNS Ops and several other forming groups, and a lot of people are trying to contribute. So is it better to have these separately focused efforts without, or perhaps we need more, perhaps I shouldn't say without, but is there an architectural vision to unify it all? When we're doing multicast DNS and DNSSEC, we need to try and think about the interactions. Are these things coordinated, and is there a better way? I'm going to say it's a question, but I think that all of these different issues lead to frustration by people that are trying to think about ways to make the DNS better. So if we, and the last bullet I think is that, to some extent, ICANN is the steward of part of the DNS. It's obviously in the interest of ICANN, I think the Internet community, to try and preserve and enhance the asset until it's time to replace it with something else that's part of the open standards world. How are we going to do that? There's breakthroughs for the bottlenecks, popularly called deossification. For those of you that aren't native English speakers, this is just referring to the fact that the DNS and oftentimes people say the whole Internet Protocol suite is kind of getting arthritis and is very hard to change. Do we want DNS too? Our experience with IPv6 shows that it may be hard to create a new system in a timely manner. Perhaps what we want to do is build an evolution to one of the research directions that we see out there to make it simpler to transition to that new system. And then there's questions about, do we need privacy? Do we need confidentiality? From the standpoint of past work, depending upon the political climate, these kinds of issues were either forbidden or at the front burner. I think Snowden puts it at the front burner for a lot of people, and there's some new efforts forming in the IETF to do that. So what do we need to do? Next slide, please. We're going to change gears here and talk a little bit about one of the ways to think about expansion is putting new data in the DNS. We were approached by some of the people that are doing LISP about being the root of the LISP system. LISP is a system that does mapping and encapsulating of identifiers. In particular, it allows you to do things with V4 addresses and V6 addresses that allow you to have a single address for a destination, which is, I guess they would call it a locator, and actually have it do multipath through the Internet without the usual stuff. So you encapsulate and then de-encapsulate on the other end, and it provides flexibility. Should we be making a choice? What should we recommend to ICANN about what do we need in the way of technical capability before we should even consider doing this? We had an issue come up here about, well, which software? There's open software and proprietary software. Does the protocol have to be open or proprietary? This all turned out to be somewhat moot because there were discussions at the political level about how address mappings were sort of owned by the RIRs, and they would kind of take the lead. I mean, one of the questions is going to be the same kind of technology could be used with RFID tags, which are clearly not a number space that are clearly in the political sphere of the address organizations, or at least I wouldn't think they would be. So how do we decide, and should we try and tie this in more uniformly with things like the DNS, because currently LISP is not really. Second thing I think is, should ICANN publish in the DNS? And the inspiration from this was a very long email thread I got as part of the collision process and the general ICANN operations, there's lists of labels that are restricted from publication of second-level domains in various other places. There's protected locations. If you want to use the label Olympics, for example, that's protected. And one of the things that ICANN does is it refers to UN-based publications that have lists of these things. But when you go and look at the list of these things on paper, they're in several different alphabets. And it's kind of hard for somebody out there to transcribe probably English, Chinese, and Arabic and all of the other scripts. Shouldn't those lists be made available online? And in particular, if we're going to think about having lists that need more real time, for example, in the collision space, shouldn't we be able to perhaps publish those in a machine-readable form and maybe even in the DNS? Another example of this kind of thing is people who are working in the field of reputation. Many of them would claim that one of the most important things in figuring out whether a particular domain is trustworthy is its birthday. In other words, how old is it? When was it born? And secondly, the activity level. So there are people who think that ICANN should encourage that registration information to be made more rapidly available as a service to the community. Now, of course, all of these kinds of things would involve thinking about, well, okay, if that's the move, what's the counter move on the part of the bad guy? But real-time publication of information, perhaps it should be available. I've always thought that ASN mnemonics would be better than ASN numbers. There's a lot of different identifiers here. Is there an opportunity? Next slide, next topic. Hardening the root. I think there's a number of opportunities here, and I think the panel looked mostly at two of them, one of which is generating the root file itself, in other words, assembling that database, and then the distribution of the root file. There's another whole area about doing analytics at the root that I'm not going to talk about, but, you know, we're aware of it. So let's talk about generating the root file. One of the things that's been suggested is that we need more robust, secure components. The hardware world has various forms of trusted computing. Can we deploy that in a way that makes the actual generation of the root file more reliable, more secure? You know, certainly with the discussion about BIOSes and audio channels and so forth and so on, it may be time to re-examine some of the choices. But I think that the general sense of the panel is that making the distribution of the root file contents more go beyond the, you know, the current root server system was one of the big opportunities. So we'll talk about that. A different axis for generating the root file is, are there ways to avoid some of the current political issues there? And we'll talk about that in detail. With regard to distributing the root file, the general idea that's out there is that what we want to do is to distribute a signed copy of the root to anybody that wants it. At that point, and assuming there's an appropriate update mechanism, that entity no longer has to rely upon being able to access a root server. Sometimes that's to bring it inside security perimeter. Others were that people theorized that what they wanted was a signed root zone that only had IPv6 in order to do various experiments, which is a request coming out of China. We have a specific proposal from Paul Vixie that basically says, well, what we should do is have a way to distribute a signed copy of the root and have standard, two particular signed Anycast addresses and have everybody just try those addresses and that you distribute copies all the way from the high levels of the current root architecture all the way down to local machines. We're not going to talk about the details of that idea. There's a bunch of other ones, and this is actually kind of in line with bunch of the research directions, which talk about, well, the data should just be signed, and how you get it is an independent issue. Next slide, please. Admittedly, one of my favorites is shared zone control. And the issue here is, can we imagine a sort of workflow language, if you will, that allows multiple parties different rights to change the contents of the same zone? So for the root, the general idea would be, can we imagine a way to do that routine maintenance operations on particular top-level domain be requested and happen by those top-level domain owners? And then avoid the whole issue about a single authority being able to run the root. We've already seen some of these ideas out here. For example, coordination of glue. There's two DNS ops mechanisms, not protocols, that are being proposed to allow coordination of DNSSEC stuff. But if we're going to have that mechanism, shouldn't we think about expanding it and generalizing it so that it could be used to coordinate anything? For example, forward and reverse address information. Or again, the routine maintenance. And then another generalization is going to be control over it, which is to say, perhaps you're allowed, a TLD somehow gets the ability to change its information in the root zone, but not another one. And is there no single authority that can stop it, but perhaps you have majority in voting? So I think the real question here is, how many of these capabilities might you add to get the maximum utility out of the work that you're putting into the idea? And obviously there's going to be things like inserting delay in order to give humans time in the loop to adjust. Next slide, please. And to monitor what's going on. Today, what happens is that there's a bunch of requests that will come into ICANN. ICANN vets the business logic. That's via business logic, automated processes, as well as human. It gets approved by the Department of Commerce. VeriSign actually publishes it. So there's actually people talk about how U.S. government is the sole authority over it, but in reality, there's several entities that are in series with updates to the root. If we want to have an automatic process, what should that look like? Next slide, please. You have a bunch of models where the CCTLD creates a request for change in a journal. Other CCTLDs perhaps vote yes or no. And, you know, you have rules on the order of if a majority assent, change takes place after 2 hours. In other words, again, some places you want to have some delay in there so the human monitoring is even possible. If people are too lazy to vote, you let things change regardless. You can imagine infinite ways to add particular detail to this mechanism. But I think it's one of the ideas that if we manage to figure out how to solve, you know, the first 90% of this problem, this mechanism could be useful in a variety of ways, including solving the political problems of the root, but in coordinating a lot of other data around the Internet. Next slide. You know, critics would claim that, well, this whole business about a distributed algorithm, what happens if they get different results and so forth, certainly a question that has to be addressed. But if you don't want to have a single authority, a distributed generation of truth is what has to happen. What keys to use? There's a proposal now already to say, well, what we just need to do is to have multiple DNS signatures on the data, and then you could vote N out of M. But that would mean, I guess, that instead of having one set of signatures, you'd have to have at least three so that you can break the tie in the case of both. Maybe that's the right place to do it. What protocols to use? You could think about doing this perhaps in DNS data. You could think about doing it via EPP. There's other things. You know, when I talk about the shared zones and control, I haven't really tried to talk about what's the low-level mechanism. what's the right choice there? And again, last issue, I think the most significant, is what are the primitives that you need? Do you want to have voting? Do you want to have delay in order to allow people to be in the loop? How is workflow defined? And with any cryptographic system, you have to figure out, well, if it goes wrong, how do you hit the reset button? And, you know, one of the things that, when I think about this, is reconciling the fact that you have a reset button and reconciling the fact that there's no single control point are often difficult to reconcile. Next slide, please. Getting back to the basic issue about, if you take a look at the DNS protocol from top to bottom, what is it that you need? What is it that you could, where could you make improvements? How do you break some of these very difficult problems? You know, in the current abstract database, by which I mean the sort of main resource record structure, matching rules and zone rules, what can you do to extend that? I think for about 25 years, people have said, why can't we publish a syntax for resource records inside of the DNS, and then when we want to add a new syntax, we don't have to. Other people have said, this whole idea is obsolete. There will be no relevant resource records created anymore. And what we're going to do is by putting text records down under special labels under the node that actually has the data. In some sense, we make the resource record type be the next level of label in the domain name system. And perhaps what we should do is just formalize that. Query another operation. There's a bunch of work that I'm familiar with that is I'm not really familiar with, but I've seen the original ideas that say one of the problems with the DNS is that there's no asynchronous interface for programmers and no particular interface that allows easy integration of DNSSEC. There are some slides out there by Paul Hoffman. The work is ongoing at VeriSign and some other partners, and we're looking to get more data to understand that. Certainly, the get host by name and the interfaces that are out there are unsatisfactory, or at least unsatisfactory to some for a variety of reasons. I think one of the panelists, Jeff Houston, tried putting Jeff.Houston into a variety of browsers and found that there was absolutely zero consistency between the search paths that were used. If we have an inconsistent user interface for domain names, can we expect users to have the maximum functionality? I think not. Is there anything you can do about it? Well, that may be the more difficult question. I think the replication issue is important. I think we need to think about it both from the standpoint of the root and from the standpoint of best practices for organizations. I mean by that, the classic example is once upon a time, the gov top level domain detected that the state of California had two computers with pornography in them. I should add, out of the hundreds of thousands of computers that they have, and de-delegated CA.gov, which created lots of problems inside of the state of California. Things like organizations, and certainly California has learned this lesson, is that they want to be able to be self-sufficient, which has implications for the way that they root their security as well as the way that they replicate their data. Should we be thinking about making those more obvious? There's lots of people who have thought about these different issues. Another question that comes up is things like, in the future, is there anything to do other than by sending DNS queries and responses in HTTPS? Because that's the only way to get universal reachability. How do you break these Gordian knots? And I think lastly, the real question is how do you make the effort worth doing? The DNS is littered with people who have added new resource record types because they thought it was interesting to put that data in the DNS, but that data doesn't get maintained unless it delivers some particular value. We can opine upon how we would want to extend the DNS, but how do we make the extensions that we propose sufficiently interesting? And I think that's, you know, one of the issues that has to be addressed. Next slide, please. So, and this is the last slide. Let me give you an example of some of the recommendations we're discussing. They're under consideration. But, for example, ICANN should publish more timely data for reserve labels and the like. Is there a way to try and get together a group of people and do a study about how to break all the Gordian knots that currently ensnare the DNS? Obviously it's going to take some time. 2020 just happens to be a catchy year. But is it worthwhile to try and figure out how to motivate such a thing to happen? I think it's time to think about prototyping. In other words, this is close to reality. New methods for root zone publication and shared zone control. We haven't talked about the whole collision issue, but I think one of the things to do is to think about actually having some of the procedures that people have talked about done in a lab environment. I refer to it as fire drills, but trying out some of those procedures in advance of the deployment. These obviously span different time zones, not time zones, but different time frames. But these are examples of some of the recommendations, and they're close, I think, to being actionable, which, again, is our goal. So I've talked long enough. I'd like to open this up and to get feedback from participants out there. So, Alice?
Thank you very much, Paul. We will now open the floor and ask for the lines to be unmuted. You will refer to the hands raised in the Adobe Connect room to create a queue. If you are not speaking, please mute your line to avoid echo. You may do so by pressing star 6, and to unmute, press star 7. If you are in the queue, please make sure that your computer speakers are muted before speaking to avoid echo. Thank you for your cooperation. Operator, could you please unmute the line?
Listen-only mode is now off.
Thank you very much. Paul, before we start, there's a question from John Demko in the chat pod. Are MSMD signed marker, some signed mark data files in scope? That's something you wish to address?
We haven't discussed that. John, do you have some recommendations for us?
John is actually responding in the chat.
Well, at any rate, I think that the short answer is that it's not something we've talked about a lot. One of the things I want to just state is that the search space here has been fairly huge, and I'm sure that there's a bunch of things that we should have considered or that we haven't discussed today, for example. I'd encourage people to bring forth these things to the panel. There's a public mailing list, and Lord knows my inbox is always open. Another example of things is that people have said, well, why don't we just take the Namecoin approach?
Paul, there is a comment from Avery in the chat room. You may have spoken of it, but I had a sound problem for a bit. Are you considering the possibility of building on what URI suggests with multiple forms of authority and schema, with IANA being the actual point where all routes meet?
I think we've touched on that a little bit, not directly. Elise, what's the IANA view on this?
Hi, I had to unmute myself. So basically, the scheme of IANA being the actual point where all routes meet, we take our direction from the policy organizations. And so it really has to do with what the various organizations, such as the IATF, the RIRs, the CCNSO, the GNSO, et cetera, decide is the appropriate role for us. We do have MOUs with the IATF and with the NRO, and we have undertaken to become the registry, I guess, of record for certain identifiers. Avery, did you have a follow-up, or is that sufficient?
This is Avery trying to speak. Oh, I can. Let me shut a speaker. Yeah, I mean, basically what I was looking at is one of the issues that we've had when people have been discussing things is the problem of a single authority point. And I understand you talked about ways to, within the DNS, as sort of traditionally conceived of having multiple authorities or sharing authority, as it were, by various means. There's also within, I know I've used it within, you know, for DTN naming, for example, and identifiers, the ability to have more than one route and one scheme as long as it's all pointing to, you know, the same address scheme, and it's just different naming schemes on an addressing scheme. I'm just wondering whether that possibility of sort of enriching the internet with multiple authority / schemas that would, following the IETF and everybody else's rules for how you get something accepted into, you know, being IANA registry held, that basically allowed that kind of multiplicity. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Avery. Jeff, I see you typed a response also to Avery. Do you want to say something? Jeff Houston, panelist.
Yeah, thanks, Elise. Jeff Houston here. Yes, Avery, I do note that the IETF in one of its working groups on URIs sort of came across this and instructed IANA to open up a registry on URI schemes, and I gave a URL for that. You'll notice that the scheme naming system is flat, and it's basically first come, first serve, and it currently works on what the IETF call expert review. So in that sense, you know, if you tried to scale the schemes into orders of millions or billions, you'd have a hard time. But then again, this is a case where the identity space at this stage is probably appropriate for the size of the identity scope. The number of schemes we have appears to number, I think, sub 100 or so. And at that stage, a flat namespace with basically first come, first serve through published RFCs appears appropriate. You know, it's not a case of trying to design one solution for all forms of identity systems, but it is a case of trying to understand that in multiple different identity systems, the issue of registration and maintenance and administration of those identity systems will vary according to its scope and nature of use. So, you know, in looking at URI schemes, I'm not sure that I could advocate any particular difference in the way that they're being treated from what we do today, but maybe you have some ideas in that space. Thank you.
I see we have Avery typing in the chat room. Are there any questions or comments? Avery's response is the following. I have thought about it some, but ideas are fragmentary and probably not thought of or such a call.
This is Rick Volpe. I'm wondering if anybody on the call has any thoughts regarding any additional identifiers that we ought to be considering.
Hey, Rick, Paul here. You know, one of the things that I've always found interesting, although difficult to work on, is the RFID tag space. You know, this is a numbering space that's mostly controlled by EPC Global, and there was an effort a while ago to standardize on sort of 96-bit RFID tags and to allocate the numbering space much as you would allocate subnets and so forth, and put all that data in the DNS. But something strange happened on the way to standardization in EPC Global, where the original scheme defined by some people at MIT got changed into a sort of fixed hierarchy scheme. In a standard process, because basically the position of EPC Global at the time was that this whole subnetting idea would never work, and it was too complicated. So I think, you know, there's also a question about whether or not you can think about ways to use the existing protocols to do security for that. There is a project called WINGS that involved at least French, German, and who else? I think maybe Dutch people trying to figure out a better way to organize the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, your hand is up in the Adobe Connect room. Do you wish to speak?
Yes, thanks for that. Yes, Rick, I've been thinking about this myself, and I must admit, the one name system that I see today that appears to be fundamentally different from all of the others is the name coin space. If you think about it from a sort of a sufficiently abstract point of view, most of the identity schema we use are a bunch of criteria and an administrative entity. And what happens is folk come along with their, you know, favorite request for an instance of that identity, and some organization or function applies the criteria and, in effect, out pops an answer. And whether it's an application inside the DNS whether it's for an IEEE MAC address, whether it's even for an ISBN periodical number. The processes are very sort of isomorphic in that respect, that you have this kind of pool of possibilities, a set of criteria, and an application process and an answer. The Namecoin space appears to me to be fundamentally different, that it doesn't actually require anything central there. It's just an algorithm that if you mine away at it long and hard enough, out pops a number, and there's no particular need to go to any central body and gain approval. It's just a number. And, you know, that I think has been of interest to many folk in the research space of identities, because it certainly appears to be one of the more novel ideas we've had about identities for some decades. And, you know, whether that's going to light fires or die a death, I don't know. But it seems to me, from that perspective, to be perhaps one of the few spaces which is, you know, fundamentally quite different from a lot of the others. There are also some kind of strange namespaces that relied on popular acceptance. Anyone lived through the Usenet name wars would have seen this idea that someone proposes a name and either folk are quiescent and the name of this news group sort of gets accepted, or it creates this sort of response of cancellations and debate and alternatives and so on, where the name criteria are sort of ill-defined and belong to a group. But maybe the sort of demise in the importance of Usenet also points to some problems in the way of that namespace being administered. But, you know, certainly there are other identity spaces and other means of managing those spaces than the sort of simple model of a registration agency, a bunch of criteria, applicants and outcomes. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, I do not see any further questions or comments in the Adobe Connect room. Do you have any closing thoughts you wish to share with the attendees?
Sure. I'd like to thank the attendees for taking the time to listen to us. I think there's a lot of other issues here that we had to try and size this to a time slot. I'd encourage any feedback or suggestions to the panel in general, and Alan has given you the contact information, or I'd be perfectly willing to hear from people directly. So I thank you for your attention, and I guess it's time to close up.
Thank you, Paul. If there are no further questions in the chat room for attendees, then I believe this concludes the webinar. Thank you very much for participating in this webinar. The web recording, slides, and transcript will be made available shortly on the webinar page. You may also reach the panel at itipanel@icann.org should there be any written input you wish to submit. Please note that all input is publicly available. Thank you for your attention and interest.